Hey, what's up, Pelicans fans? Welcome to The Bird Rights. My name is Preston Ellis, and I'm the host for the new home to all things Pelicans on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Follow us at The Bird Rights and get all the latest on your Pelicans at TheBirdRights.com. What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to the Bird Calls Podcast. Today we are recapping the Pels matchup with the Pacers, hosted by the Big Picture Boys, Travis and Trevor, before going to part two, where I will be hosting Chris McKee of Raptors HQ to preview this upcoming Thursday's matchup in Toronto. All right, here's part one. Take it away, Big Picture Boys.
And welcome back, New Orleans Pelicans fans. We are coming to you live. Well, we're not live, this is a podcast, but we're coming to you after Pelicans defeated the Indiana Pacers tonight, 117-112 in Indiana. The Pelicans gave up a franchise record, 75 first half points. They were down by 14 at halftime. Things weren't looking so good. They came back. They had an incredible third quarter. Came back and won the game 117-112. AD was incredible. Boogie Cousins was incredible. And they got just enough contributions from other guys. I'm Travis Tate. We got Trevor Ritchie. We are the Big Picture Boys. It's been a while, Trevor. I'm so sorry that we haven't been able to connect. What did you think of tonight's game?
Well, it's not my fault we haven't been able to connect. You essentially have left.
It's my fault.
Weeks, and I guess the Big Picture has made you away from me. But I watched the first half, and I watched the first half, and it's just kind of the offense kept up. I'm pleased with what I saw on the offensive end. There was just things like early foul trouble from Jrue Holiday and DeMarcus Cousins. But when you get to halftime, and you think your offense is running well, and you look up and you see 75-61, you're down 14. You look at the stat sheet and you're out rebounded in the first half, offensively and defensively. The Pacers had more assists, steals, blocks, and even though the Pelicans shot around 53% from the field, the Pacers shot 10% better. The Pelicans had triple the turnovers. They had 9. The Pacers only had 3 at halftime, and I don't know if I attribute – I mean, shot selection was poor. The Pacers were making some tough shots, but there were also defensive breakdowns. And like I said, the foul trouble also contributes. I don't know what I'm going to point to specifically in that first half. It wasn't good enough, honestly.
Yeah, I thought it was just one of those – it was the perfect storm in a lot of ways. The Pacers have put up some huge numbers early this season. They're kind of one of those overachieving teams in the East that has kind of been a surprise, like them in Detroit. And then obviously Orlando as well, but they've looked really good so far this year. Sabonis didn't play tonight. He came over in the OKC trade, but Oladipo had some moments. He had an early couple of highlight plays, including a sort of one of those wraparound from the other side of the hoop dunks. So he had some moments, and then Darren Collison made some shots. I thought Lance Stephenson was just huge for them in the first half. He made an incredible, like 30-foot long three. He had a nice playmaking moment where he kind of did like some jab steps and stuff, and then got a bounce pass to, I think, maybe Thad Young for a dunk right before the halftime. But they just had everything going. And it is one of those, like you mentioned, you know, the Pelicans offense I thought was running very smoothly. Things were going nice for AD. I think he made like 7 out of his first 8 shots, or, you know, maybe even 9 out of his first 10. I mean, he only missed about 5 shots all night. I'll get those exact stats in a minute, but he was just incredible. Cousins was also just super good. What do you think it was that happened in the second half? Because to me, I thought it was basically just that the Pacers didn't really get any kind of penetration, and they were relying probably too heavily on outside shooting. And basically their shot went away from them and they just didn't get anything going. And the next thing you knew, the Pelicans were just getting whatever they wanted to offensively.
Well, the first thing that I saw, sorry, Travis. Like I said, the turnovers in the first half, that gives up points. The foul trouble, losing Drew Holiday and DeMarcus Cousins, is going to open some lanes up. And I feel like, and then obviously shooting 63% from the field in the half is a little bit unrealistic. So I feel like the Pacers came down a notch. They came down to reality in the second half. The Pelicans continued to play tough defense, forced the Pacers into tough shots. They turned the ball over less. And, I mean, essentially they came back and evened the score in almost every statistical category. They ended the game back ahead in rebounds, tied in offensive rebounds, leading in defensive, more assists, more steals, more blocks. They had more turnovers, but they had less turnovers than the Pacers did in the second half. And yeah, they shot better from, and they ended the game shooting better from the field when they were shooting worse than the Pacers by, like I said, 10%. And the third quarter was critical. Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins combined for somewhere around like 28 or maybe 30 of the Pelicans' 35 points. I don't know what the exact number was. I know that it was a good majority of them. They took over the game. They brought the game back, like you said, down 14 at halftime. And then the game, I'm not sure what the third quarter lead was. I think it was two. The Pelicans were up by two. And then the fourth quarter, it was just there was a tough stretch. The Pacers found a way back in. Drew Holiday, while I'm touching on him, late in the game, his shot selection was poor throughout the entire game. I'm not going to panic on him as a player or any of his capabilities, but I am hitting the panic button on there's got to be something done and it's got to happen now. He struggled ever since DeMarcus Cousins has been brought to this team, and there's got to be something that's figured out. When you play more minutes than the two players that I'm about to mention, Jameer Nelson and Darius Miller, and you can't outscore them. Drew Holiday had 10 points. Jameer Nelson had 10 points, and Darius Miller had 12. You're playing 29 minutes, and you're averaging a significant amount more than those two players, and you can't outscore them. It's just time to hit the panic button and just say that. I mean, we've been talking about it for a long time, but it's time for the team to hit the panic button. It's time for the coaches to hit it, and it's time for somebody to figure something out. Late in the game, he gets fouled twice, two free throw series. He misses one of each. Luckily, on the second one, DeMarcus Cousins – a critical finish, and God was he hyped, and rightfully so.
On the first one, Davis got his rebound and came down and called the timeout. Got the timeout. Yeah,
I mean, two critical plays. Had that not happened, Travis. Sorry to interrupt, but had those two plays not happened, I could definitely see the Pelicans losing down the stretch.
Yeah, totally.
And that would come off of Drew Holiday missing free throws. So
that's true. If I was going to play devil's advocate, I would say that I thought tonight he was generally better than I've seen him. I think he's getting a little bit better at just playing the two. And while at the same time, occasionally he does take over as lead ball handler, especially when he's paired with Davis. And the Pelicans look like they're willing to have Drew become the lead ball handler even when Jameer Nelson is out there, which didn't happen often. But, I mean, big picture, this team generally doesn't rely on just, like, here's our point guard and he's going to bring the ball up the floor every single time. It's kind of like whoever gets the rebound can bring it up. Like, Cousins and AD bring the ball up half the time. So I don't have a problem with him bringing the ball up or not bringing the ball up, but what he's got to do is find the moments when he's going to act like a true two. And, you know, as soon as he gets the ball, make an attacking move. And I thought he did that a few times tonight. I still like his partnership with AD. I know he had at least one alley-oop with him. He made another couple of nifty passes to him. AD, and we've just got to talk about Anthony Davis. Tonight he went 14 out of 18. He had 14 rebounds. He had two blocks. He had 37 total points. He made 4 out of his 5 3 attempts. Tonight was probably, you know, he might have more gaudy numbers. I remember he had a 59-point game against the Pistons a couple of years ago. He's had other massive nights, but I mean, this is going to be about as good as it gets when you consider the number of field goals that he took and he only missed 4. One of those being a 3-pointer. What more can you say about him? He played 41 minutes and 15 seconds. I mean, are we just looking at, you know, this is the kind of guy that can lead them to the promised land, or is he gonna, you know, continue to put up massive numbers for a team that maybe only wins 40 games every year? You know, do you think his play is gonna turn into more and more wins for this Pelicans team?
I think it will, and I think when he can have performances like he had tonight, and in unison with DeMarcus Cousins, who also had 32 points and 13 rebounds for the second time this season, Davis and Cousins had, they both had 30 points and 30 plus points and 10 plus rebounds. It's ridiculous if they can work in, and you can kill the narrative for anyone listening that doubted that Cousins and Davis could work.
Kill it
tonight. Rip it up, shred it, throw it in the trash, give it away. The red flags are the players that we have in the starting lineup that are giving us goose eggs. I saw that Ollie said something. I don't know if it was in our group chat with our colleagues, but he said something. We're expecting too much out of Etuan Moore. In my opinion, we're getting exactly what I would expect out of Etuan. If you look at Drew, like I said, it's panic button. And I have a question for you, Travis. If you look at Dante Cunningham, he's essentially, if you just want to break it down, a zero across the board in everything. He's done essentially nothing for a good stretch of time now. I think he had 2 points tonight, 3 rebounds on 1 of 3 shooting, and that was it. And he's a starter. What more? For the third straight game, Darius Miller has had 9 or more points. He had a shaky start to the season in comparison with Dante Cunningham. What more does he have to do over this stretch for Alvin Gentry to maybe consider putting Miller into the starting lineup over Cunningham? Would it be worth a try?
Yeah, I think we can see that's a great question, and I get what you're going with here. I'd say just be patient at this point. I think we can all see the way this is going. I would at this point, I'm thinking that if this team continues to keep figuring out its best lineups, you know, they're going to see that they're going to play a lot of Jameer Nelson and they're going to play Tony Allen a fair amount. He played like 25 minutes tonight and I thought he was generally pretty good. And then I think that they're going to have to play Miller, because Cunningham is essentially, like you said, And I don't even mean it in like a really like negative way towards him, because he had a great year last year and I think he's a legit NBA player, but he's basically a zero out there. Like, he doesn't really give me anything. There might be certain matchups where he feels really good against, you know, when he guards certain guys. I know that there's sort of Twitter talk and the birdrights.com talk about him being a good matchup on LeBron James. I mean, nobody's a good matchup on LeBron. He just had like 57 the other day. So, you know, I think that the way this is trending is that we're going to see less and less of Cunningham and probably more and more of Miller. I thought Miller looked pretty good tonight. I know, as you mentioned, he's scored 9-plus points in 3 straight games or something. That's okay. Kind of what I want to see more out of him, and what I saw just on a few possessions, is more sudden aggression with his shot, because he's there to shoot on offense. And then defensively, he's just going to have to do the best he can. He's going to be out there in certain lineups where he's basically going to be playing the 4, especially more so when AD is out there at the 5. And so if he can get into certain matchups where maybe he feels okay guarding the 4, That's going to be a big help on offense for him to get up a bunch of three-point attempts because, again, you know, he's another one of these guys who he has to find a way to be a good, not just like a good player and take a bunch of shots, but like be a good secondary player. Like, he's not going to be in any lineup where he's going to be the number one option. He's every lineup he's going to play with the Pelicans, he's going to be at least, I would say, probably the number three option at very best. Like, if he's out there with like Tony Allen, you know, he's going to be more of an offensive option than he is, obviously. But he's barely, just a guy who needs to get to the right places.
While we're talking about this, I forget to throw out that a return date for former all-star point guard and champion point guard Rajon Rondo was thrown out a return date. I think it was November 17th against the Nuggets. Not concrete. They're taking that process day by day. So while we're talking about you know what we're doing with the starting lineup and with those holes that we have, when Rondo comes back, do you go with one of Cunningham or Miller and stick with that, or do you go with the three guard and put more there? I think that's the conversation now, especially with essentially everyone struggling.
So you're saying about possibly playing Drew, Etuan, and Rondo?
Would you do that, or would you go with either Cunningham or Miller in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I'd probably stick with the Cunningham or Miller situation. I don't really have a problem with the Cunningham thing as of right now, just because I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to be playing 45 minutes a night. So like, I know I'm going to be getting massive minutes from both AD and Cousins, and that's going to take a lot of those minutes away from Cunningham, because Miller is now playing. Like, Miller is it appears to be an actual NBA player. So I don't know if I want Rondo immediately coming in and taking minutes away from, say, obviously, I mean, everybody here is a fan of Jameer Nelson. But even like Tony Allen is going to find certain nights when he's pretty effective. So as of right now, I would be, and I guess I'm always kind of this way when guys are coming back from injury, especially in a case where Rondo hasn't played with this team. He doesn't know what his role is, and he's got a very ball heavy type of identity. And so I don't know if I would want to immediately start plugging him in and playing him 20, 25, 28 minutes a game when he hasn't been out there, especially when you consider what this team has gotten from Jameer Nelson, who has just been a revelation. I mean, I wish I would have known that he was still that, like, basically his age is kind of only helping him. He knows everything about where to go, what to do, where guys should be, where the pass should go, which, you know, picks he should take and which ones he should go away from. I think he's just been fantastic. And so I don't want to limit Jameer Nelson at all in favor of Rondo.
Well, I think if you're moving Drew to the two back for Rondo, first of all, I disagree with you. I think you do. I think you immediately put Rondo into the starting lineup. I think you immediately pay him 25 minutes a game. I think that's the coaching staff's plan, or else I've been an advocate for that. I feel like it would be a better lineup if Jameer Nelson was a starter right now. But I think you do. I mean, with Drew being the primary ball handler right now, outside of, you know, DeMarcus is as well a lot of the time. But you know, we're not getting much, and we know Rondo's not. He is ball heavy, and he's ball centric, and he needs to have it. But it's not like he's going to shoot it. You know, he's not going to throw up a ton of shots. He's not going to throw up dumb shots. He's going to allow AD and DeMarcus to get more shots inside of the paint. You're gonna allow Drew to finally get more comfortable off the ball and probably have more open shots. She's gonna open up the 3-point shooting, which is gonna be able to still spread DeMarcus Cousins out to the perimeter and Anthony Davis at times. And I feel like it just gives, if you throw Rondo back into the starting lineup, it just gives the entire roster a whole different feel, a completely different sensibility when it comes to depth and just mindset, essentially. And I feel like, I don't know, I believe I said that, I'm not sure if I said this on a previous podcast, but when we spoke to Tony Allen after the Minnesota Timberwolves loss. A question was asked, how far do you think this team is away from being where they should be? And Tony Allen's answer was Rondo. Just straight up Rondo. He said specifically, we're short an all-star champion point guard, and once he comes back, we'll be ready to go. And I think that's a huge deal when you ask a player, how far are you from being where you want to be? And it's one player.
Tony Allen is senile.
That says a lot. I don't know. I think, from what I hear around and from what I've seen, starting all the way back from Media Day, Rondo's the key. And I don't think if your goal is to win games and your goal is to get in the playoffs, in which we're going to be skating by if we want to do that with how competitive the Western Conference is. And I know that narrative gets old, but it's just the damn truth. And it's going to continue to be the truth some of these teams are struggling right now. I don't know, the Thunder, I think they play tonight and it'll be behind us once this comes out, but they're not at 500 right now. I think they're 4-5, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just going to be a grind the entire season. So you're going to have to do, and that's what Gentry's doing right now. That's why DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis are playing 40 plus minutes every night, is because it puts them in the best position to win, and they don't have a choice but to win games. And I think when Rondo comes back, if you want to win games, you're going to have to use him. And if your plan down the stretch is for him to be your starting point guard, you're going to have to get him back incorporated into this lineup as quickly as possible. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to put him out there.
Here's what I would say to all that. And, you know, before the season started, I was going to be pretty high on what Rondo was going to give him, because I did think that it was probably a good move to move Drew more off ball than he had been previously. I think they've already got a better version of Rondo when they got Jameer Nelson. I think that that's like the lucky piece that they needed.
Hit the brakes.
He's a shooter. He's more of a shooter than Rondo is. And so in those minutes when you say that, you know, you're going to have Cousins act as kind of like a point center, he's a better off-ball player than Rondo is. In those moments when Drew decides to run the offense with another point guard out there, I think that the better option for that player is for it to be Jameer Nelson instead of Rondo. From what I've seen, he's much more of like a steadying force. Now, I mean, I'm not sitting here trashing Rondo. I think that he's going to be fine, but like I've just been so like, it's been so nice to see Jameer Nelson just basically use his IQ to figure out everything on the floor. Additionally, I want to mention Tony Allen. He played 24 minutes tonight. He did some random things in terms of like scoring.
Walk away from the point, Travis. Walk away from it.
Okay. Well, okay. I want to say I like Jameer Nelson more than I like Rondo, but I haven't seen Rondo play this year. So, I can't make a strong statement there, but I know I like Jameer Nelson.
At this point in their careers, are you saying that you feel like Jameer Nelson right now, at this point in their career, is better than Rondo?
I don't think better in a vacuum. I think better on this team.
Okay. All right. I can disagree. I can agree to disagree with you if that's your statement. If it was completely in a vacuum, I might have lost my mind for a moment. But I think you can make a fair argument for that, and it's something that we'll have to wait and see. I'm just going to no comment and disagree on that.
Yeah, I mean, the entire point of this – you know, of us even talking about this, is that we haven't even seen Rondo yet. Like, did I love Rondo in 2009 when he was with the Celtics? Like, oh my God, I was obsessed with him. He was probably one of my favorite players in the league. But first of all, he's not that player. And second of all, we haven't even seen him play with this particular team. I have no idea what his partnership is going to be like with, say, AD. Because I know what we've seen in the past with Drew and him. I understand that Drew has been really bad ever since Cousins came over in terms of like putting up numbers, and generally he just looks like super lost, but he does look, he looks close to what he's supposed to look like when Drew is out there with AD, I think.
I've got a big picture. I'm gonna say on the podcast, on the record, the first game that Rondo comes back and plays at least 25 minutes, he's gonna have a double double. At least 10 points and at least 10 assists. And I said it here
that's
first.
That's a strong statement.
If it happens, you must credit Richie TMR on Twitter.
Will do. At Richie TMR. How do you spell that?
RITCHIETMR.
Let's get back to Tony Allen. He played 24 minutes tonight. He did, you know, if you look at his box score, you just see, you know, 2 and 4 and 1 and 2 and 1. But I thought generally he was very good. I wrote in my notes as I was watching the game, I've seen him hold and pull on jerseys and get away with stuff that those kind of, you know, those former Grizzlies get away with. I remember Z-Bo doing a lot of that, Zach Randolph doing a lot of that, always getting away with it. It's got to be the most frustrating thing ever when you're the other team and you have to play against either a Zach Randolph or a Tony Allen, because they just do so much like dirty stuff that doesn't get caught. He had some turnovers and some kind of strange bad plays, but then he also had some nice plays, and he's a really smart cutter. And he even made a three, I think, didn't he?
I believe so. I'm not sure.
The box score doesn't say he did. I swear he made one. It must have just been a long two, but
I think the thing about what you said about his defense and what he gets away with is just speaks to how much of a cerebral defensive player he is, that he understands where that line is at of what a ref can see and what a ref will call, and mm-hmm. he rides that line the entire game.
Yep.
And that's yep. what you do when you're a gritty athlete like him, and just about in any sport, that's the type of player, if you want to play good defense, that you have to be, and that's the type of things you have to understand. And it's a spark that he provides that we need. I feel like if he had the stamina and the energy to play starter minutes, that he would be the starter right now. And I don't think there's a question anywhere in the organization that he would be. He just can't play 30 minutes a game. He can
barely play over
Dante.
Oh.
Most definitely to me. I think when you see Dante can't hit the open threes in the corner that he usually makes, he's not as good of a defensive player. So, I mean, if you're going to sacrifice that offense, either way it goes, I would value Tony Allen's defensive presence more so than what Dante Cunningham it has given us thus far, which is why I say that. And from what I've heard Gentry say at practice, he hasn't indicated that that would be the case, but he has indicated and essentially shot down the possibility of Tony Allen starting, because he can't play that long. He said after the Timberwolves game that he played 18 minutes and he felt like he played 30. And so it's just not possible right now. He's not conditioned enough. I would have loved to see it, and I you know, just to try it out. It's a little late in the game. If the plan is when Rondo comes back to reset that starting lineup, we're only a little over 10 day or right at 10 days away, be 9 days when this probably drops. But it's unfortunate that he can't play that long. But what he's giving us is extremely valuable. The entire team knows what he brings to the table. They appreciate what he brings to the table. And there's not many other players in this league like Tony Allen, and it's a great thing to be able to watch him play on a consistent basis.
Yeah, that's interesting. I forgot about that quote. I remember you and Ollie or somebody tweeting out that quote about how he felt so tired after playing that few minutes. It's still early in the year. I mean, there's plenty of time for him to get his wind. I would love to see more of him if he's able to do what it is that he's been known for doing.
Well, he was the first man off the bench tonight, I believe, when yeah. DeMarcus Cousins picked up that third foul, or yep. it was either second or third foul. Tony Allen came off the bench. So, I mean, he was the sixth man tonight, and that's the, when he comes on the court, he brings that sixth man energy. So that might be the role that he plays moving forward if he continues to perform at the level he has been. It's not a lot. It's not a ton. It's not spectacular. He's never been a player that you just look at the box score and he blows you out of the water. But the eye test doesn't lie. If you understand basketball, and he passes that on an almost a nightly basis. He has times where he misses a layup or he misses a shot. He's never been the best shooter or the best offensive player. That's just something you live with when he's as good of a cutter as he is. If you see him cutting to the basket, you give him the ball. I think he has some stat as far as cutting goes. I think he has the most cuts on the team, or he's cut the most. He just runs, and that's part of the reason why when he plays 18 minutes, it feels like he played 30, because he's about the only player trying to make sure that ball's moving and that he's cutting. And hopefully that's something he can instill into the rest of the team. And hopefully that six-man role is something that he can live up to and live in and keep contributing what he has and improve upon that if possible.
Yeah, I want a couple points off of that you brought up. The cutting thing is, I think, is totally true, where he might be one of the few guys on the team who really does a nice job of cutting. I think Moore does it sometimes, Etuan Moore. And I think even Drew does it a little bit. But I also wanted to say that cutting thing brought up, I think in the first half, we just got destroyed by backdoor cuts, guys not paying attention. I think people like Cunningham were maybe caught sleeping, and we got beat on some backdoors and got some layups and stuff. I do remember Cunningham was the guy who got beat on that Oladipo like highlight dunk. Bogdanovich had a really nice layup against Cunningham. So, you know, if Cunningham is going to be the guy who gets victimized, you know, you hate to call out just a couple of plays and say that he's not playing good defense, but when it becomes noticeable like that, it's easy to point the finger and you say, well, what kind of value is he giving us on the other side if he's not going to make plays on the defensive end? So maybe that's a situation where we start playing Miller more minutes, or playing Tony Allen those minutes, like you mentioned. So I think that's totally true. I want to zoom out. We are the big picture boys. This is the third win in a row on a road trip of four games. We beat Dallas, beat the Chicago Bulls, who are terrible, then beat Indiana tonight. We've got one last game on the road trip. They're playing the Raptors on Thursday, November 9th. Games are going to be at 6:30. What do you think about our chances in that game? I think the team is generally going to be super pumped up for having just gone 3-0 on this road trip, and now they want to close it out with a 4-0. It's one of those things where winning might breed more winning, but Toronto's pretty good. I know they've kind of changed over some of the guys in the lineup and stuff. Patrick Patterson is gone. Terrence Ross is gone. But they still have Lowry and DeRozan and Valanciunas. What do you think their chances are on Thursday?
First of all, Valanciunas is going to look like barbecue chicken on defense.
Oh, boy.
Speaking of what,
we'll get to Thad Young. We're going to have to talk about how badly Thad Young got abused tonight. But go ahead. We'll continue talking about Toronto for now.
I'm just going to go with the why not mentality, and hopefully that's what the team's going with. Like you said, hopefully this winning breeds more winning. It's a 3-0 road trip. I mean, at the start of the season, if you look at the first seven road games, and then if they win against the Raptors, it'll be the first eight road games. I wouldn't have seen, they're 5-2 right now on the road. Didn't see that coming. They're 500, and that's going to, when that sits in and they realize that this is the first time New Orleans has been over 500 since April of 2015, it's the first time that Alvin Gentry has been over 500 as the Pelicans head coach. There's a crazy stat for you. It's going to bring confidence, and it has to. I think the confidence that we saw just late in the game against Indiana was inspiring, and it seemed to catch on throughout the team. Like we were talking about the series of free throws where Davis gets the loose ball and calls the timeout. He was hyped. Then the next series comes and Boogie gets that put back, and they go to the bench. And I don't know if you saw the shot where they go to the bench, but they looked great. I just saw a tweet that Chris True tweeted out. And it said, what was that quote about Bill Simmons saying that DeMarcus looked miserable playing in New Orleans? And posted a picture of DeMarcus Cousins smiling. And I just think all of that is going to play into this confidence and this momentum rolling into Toronto. And I'm not going to guarantee a win. I'm just saying that I feel like even though the Raptors are in the top half of that Eastern Conference play, that it's going to be a why not type of game. It's going to be a gritty performance. I don't think any game at this point right now, you have to assume when Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins are on the court, it can happen. The 14-point deficit at halftime, you give up 75 points in the first half and you still find a way to win. We gave up 70 points to the Kings, find a way to come back and win. And I get those teams aren't necessarily the Toronto Raptors and haven't done with the players that are on their rosters what the Toronto Raptors have been able to do. But it's still, I just think it can be done. And like I said, I'm not going to give a concrete win or loss, but I definitely think it's possible.
Yeah, I don't particularly like their chances against Toronto. I think that Toronto is definitely a better team than New Orleans. I would also note that we do have an, like you mentioned, I mean, it's like, I can't believe we're saying these numbers, but they're 5-2 on the road, but here are the teams they've beaten on the road. The Lakers, they're terrible. The Kings are somehow even worse. Dallas is maybe the worst team in the NBA, if not for Chicago, who they also beat. And then so Indiana is kind of like by far their best win on the road. And then Toronto is going to be probably the best team they've played on the road, I guess. They're probably better than Memphis. I'm not sure. But yeah, so I don't know what's going to happen there, but I do like your point about this team generally. It seems like they're in a different place than they've been in I mean, they're definitely in a different place than they've been in previous years, just because the last 2 years, as we have alluded to many times, you know, we get off to what a 2-12 start or something, and then a 1-13 start or whatever. Whatever the starts were the last couple of years have just been so bad. So it'll be super interesting to see if they can play a good game against Toronto, who Toronto played probably one of the best games of the year. Well, I don't know, one of the best games of the year, but a really entertaining game against Golden State about a week ago and nearly won that game. So that was fun to see for them. What do you a few more things on the Pacers. I mentioned him just a little bit ago, Thaddeus Young, who I really like. You know, whenever he comes up in trade rumors and, you know, you see him have these massive games sometimes where if he's making outside shots, then he's just like a really spectacular player. He's a great athlete. You want to say that he's a really good defender, but tonight it was just like he had no chance. Davis would essentially just get the ball and kind of jump in the air and just shoot a little three-footer over him time after time after time. Is Thaddeus Young dead? Is Thaddeus Young alive? What happened to him tonight? Or is just maybe Davis is just that good?
Yeah. I mean, Thad is I see him as a three trying to guard two fives out there, or the size of two fives, and it's not going to happen. I understand that typically plays the four, but he's more of a three, and that's kind of what we work with, that Tony Allen and Darius Miller are more twos, and we use them in the three spot, and then we have to stretch Dante to the four at times when necessary. So that's kind of the same stretch deal with Thaddeus, and that's happened in the NBA. That's a trend. That's something that, you know, players like that are going to have to deal with on a nightly basis when you face teams that have two talented bigs or talented front courts just in general, and you have size mismatches. That's going to happen, and there's not many people, period, that match up with those two. They're going to be able to guard them, let alone when you're undersized or at a disadvantage. Just one thing I wanted to go back and point to is, when you name off those teams and you kind of, you didn't purposely take it out of context, but when you take out of context that we were coming off a, you know, 40-point loss in the preseason to Memphis, Then we go in, you know, we play them again. We lose that game. I think we all saw that coming. The Lakers road game comes in between a Warriors home game that they battle extremely hard, possibly could have won. Then you have to go on the road to the Lakers right after that. It's not the easiest thing to do going across the country after playing as hard as they did. Then you have the Trailblazers and you lose to them on the road because Anthony Davis, you know, falls out and you don't play great. You lose by 10. Then you go to the Kings and Anthony Davis doesn't play and it's emotional. DeMarcus Cousins feels like he hasn't do anything he can do to get that win. And then like now we're on that 4-game road stretch. When we looked at this preseason, I said, if we can just get out of the first 12 games at 500, it's a success. Cause when you just take, when you take those teams out of the fact that 8 of these first 12 games are on the road and 2 of the 4 home games that we have are against the 2 teams that were in the finals last year. I mean, we're in a damn good place right now for what on paper the schedule will look like starting the season. I wanted to bring that back around into context a little more.
Yeah, that's totally fair, especially that Kings game. That's easy to overlook now, you know, 2 weeks later after it happened. But obviously the night when that was happening, that was just, you know, that was really quite the event going on.
No one's going to look back at these wins and say, how did they beat the Bulls and the Mavericks on back-to-back nights? How did they struggle so much? When we get to the, you know, January, February, March, no one cares. They just have to get the win. And I don't think that that's going into Toronto. They're not going to look back and say, dude, I don't know how we're going to match up against these Raptors when we could barely beat the Bulls, Mavericks and Pacers. They're looking at, we just got 3 wins on the road and we're going to try to go get another one. And I think that you have to do that. You have to have a short mind no matter what happens. You either get the win or you get the loss and you move on and try to do it all over again. And I think that that builds enough confidence to run off of and put some fuel in the gas tank for these guys to hopefully get a win against the Raptors and then come home and face the Clippers on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm going to bring up a little bit more of the schedule here because we're ending a road trip and then we've got 5 out of the next 6 are at home. We kind of up the level of competition a little bit. We got the Clippers. We then play the Hawks, who stink. They're also in the running for worst team in the NBA. And then we play the Raptors again, this time at home. Then we go on the road for 1 against Denver. And then we come back home for OKC and the Spurs. There's no back-to-backs in there or anything, so there's none of that to worry about. Thank you, Adam Silver, for extending the schedule. But things are going to get a little more real here. The Clippers look like, you know, they're decent. They're obviously, it hurts when you lose somebody like Chris Paul, but they've got other guys. They've got, Blake Griffin's playing great and DeAndre Jordan and all those guys. And then obviously, you know, at the end of the schedule there, you got OKC and the Spurs. Is this a situation where you're just trying to keep your head above water still? Or do you think that, there's a home crowd advantage that we can take advantage of in New Orleans?
Well, we're at a disadvantage at home right now. I'm not sure what the exact record is. I'm just not looking at the numbers, but it's not good. And it's not a winning record at home right now. Hopefully once we get to the OKC and the Spurs games that you mentioned, we're in the hopes that Rondo will be back. That might mean that the lineup and the roster holds depth and it makes things better, or that might mean that we're trying to incorporate a player that we want to use at a high level moving forward, and that costs us a game or two. I think the Clippers game presents a fascinating matchup when you look at Patrick Beverley's probably going to be able to defensively do whatever he wants to with whoever he's guarding as far as Drew and just some of the players that we have struggling. And then it's just going to be a battle of front courts. It's going to be a fun game to watch. Definitely in the paint and down low, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a challenge. Then you go to the Hawks, you have to win that. And I don't care how sloppy it is. You just have to win it. And then you have the Raptors come back to at home. So whether you win or lose the first game, you're going to be able to go back and watch that film, make adjustments, and to that point, that's one thing that I feel like the Pelicans did extremely well tonight, and it shows in the box score, is the halftime adjustments, and that's just something that they're going to have to do. If they lose a game, they're going to have to go back and watch that film and bounce back. And that you know, I kind of could foresee that happening with the Raptors, that they lose this next game to Toronto, and then they come back and have them at home, and they find a way to win that game. And that's just the type of things that happen throughout the course of an NBA season. It is a tough stretch. I don't know what to predict at this point. I think it is the entire season's going to be a stay above water. I mean, when you look at where you want to be sitting in the playoffs, 6, 7, 8 seed, you're only going to be around, I would say, this team maybe at best. My prediction before the season started, before Rondo got injured, and I think before Solomon Hill got injured, was 46 wins, which is only five games above 500. So you're trying to keep your head above water the entire season. So that's going to be the answer throughout the entire year.
Yeah, totally. You know, I think every fan out there wants to go, you know, when you see, oh, we've got 5 of the next 6 at home, like, let's go 5-1 because we're going to win all of our home games. Well, it just doesn't really work like that. You know, maybe occasionally it will, but then that's probably going to be offset by some losses that you shouldn't have, unless, of course, you're, you know, the Golden State Warriors or something. I got a question for you, and it's our Big Picture Boys segment, I guess. We need to get a sponsor for this, I think. Let's get Raising Cane's to...
No. We got to get Zatarain's, dude. The Pelicans are 5-2 since they put that patch on.
Good call.
We gotta.
All right.
We need some spice. I could go for some jambalaya while we record.
I like that dirty rice. Oh, man.
Yeah. If they're listening, we're here. Big Picture Boys are here for Zatarain's. This is not an endorsement, however.
Hook it up with the... I will endorse the dirty rice. I love
Travis's
the dirty
endorsements rice. Are not a reflection on the Bird Rice podcast.
All right. Yeah, that's totally me. You can at me. I'm at Trabeta. That's Trabeta.
Quick plug.
I want to go to a topic that we've talked a lot about in our group DM chat thing. And I brought it up just quickly earlier. And actually, you brought it up. What do you think about the national writer situation in regards to their view of the AD and Cousins pairing? Like, why did this idea that A, they weren't going to work, which, you know, you can have that prediction. You can say, oh, well, I don't think that they're going to work. Well, now, you know, we're 40 games into this, and the beginning of the season has shown us nothing but a tremendous impact from the two of them playing together. I mean, it's very obvious that they pair well. You see it very obviously in those situations where, you know, our own David Fisher did a story about how when they run a pretty simple play, which is horns, where you have the two big guys at the top setting picks, and then one guy will pop and one guy will dive. You give your point guard so many options that you can kind of run that play to death and get away with it. Or you can have Cousins as your ball handler, or occasionally you can have Davis as your ball handler, or, you know, somebody's going to get an offensive rebound, or somebody's going to make a block, or there's just any number of good plays that are going to happen when those two guys are on the floor at the same time. So why is it that national writers, for instance, at The Ringer, they bring this up like every other week, it seems like, do they want to split them apart? Are they not watching the Pelicans games when these two play together?
I don't think it's about
basketball.
Is it
that
they want to
see Cousins go somewhere else?
I don't think it's about on the court. I think when you from the standpoint where I could see the argument, I don't read their content. Speaking specifically to The Ringer and these other, I typically just don't read them. But the argument that I see that could have been made before the season, before we see the performances that they have had together is you have Anthony Davis presumably becoming unsettled at the fact that he can't win. The GM is making some horrid mistakes. The head coach is trying to coach a roster that he doesn't have at times, and you have to do something. You give away the highest draft pick since Anthony Davis, the most promising young player we've had, for a rental that you're not sure if you're going to be able to retain. And to that point, a rental that has had temperamental issues regarding on and off the court that has hindered the Sacramento Kings from time to time. And then on top of that, you add a Rondo that has, I think the media has turned Rondo into what people think of him today more so than what he actually is. But just when you look at it, you question, then you bring in a guy like Josh Smith and just, I don't know, it's just different things where I think they're looking at it. Can this work in that locker room? Could this blow up? Could this be where DeMarcus Cousins has shown that he can be ball-centric and he can hold the ball and he can attack the rim and he can dribble, and Anthony Davis is still going to get his. But I could see the argument, like I said, before you get to watch them play, because once you see him play, you can cut it out. And I think that's part of it. When you start this narrative and then you don't watch him play and you don't see what's going on and you don't see how well it's worked, obviously you're not going to have the right idea about it. But I don't know if I put that together, if I said all that well. It's just kind of a thing where, like I said, you look at the locker room and you look at the roster on paper and you say, man, I don't know how it's going to work. And the one thing that I question myself is you think when you put those two players together, it makes the game of basketball easier. And unfortunately for this roster, that's not the point. It makes it harder. They both have to play 40-plus minutes because they're not getting the production they need out of the surrounding players. And at times that sucks. I think, in my personal opinion, that's what happened in the Orlando Magic game where DeMarcus only scored 12 points. Is he was coming off a 41-point, 23-rebound game against the Kings, a 29-point, however, 13 rebounds, I think, against the Cavs. And then he had the Magic, and he's gassed. And how could you not be when you're scoring 30, 40 points, 13 to 20 rebounds in back-to-back games? And then, you know, you run out at some point. And I think that's part of it that can become frustrating and can start to be an issue. But as long as they can win enough games and they can stay at 500 or a game or two better and they can keep that confidence, that is what's going to keep the team alive and keep the stigma away. Once that starts to fall and the same old Pelicans losing narrative returns, then I could see where we might start to have an issue. It's still way too early in the process. The trade happened, you know, February. It's still too early. But I think as far as from a basketball perspective, like I said earlier in the podcast, you can kill it. I mean, it works damn good. I don't care if they play, you know, until the All-Star break and DeMarcus gets traded. I don't care if they play for 10 years. In my opinion, they're going to be the greatest front court players to have ever played together. It's not arguable to me. There's no two players in the front court that have played together that have the skill sets that Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins have and have been able in what is right now a small sample size, but I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon. No one's been able to do that. I don't, you know, maybe the way the league's going, it might be able to happen again. I don't see it happening. DeMarcus is probably in his prime. I think Anthony Davis shows each season that he comes in that he's still getting better. So I know that I've kind of gone on a tangent here, but it bothers me when people say that, because from my perspective, like I said, I see it as the best two big men to have ever played together. And that's what I think about it.
You're going pretty far there. I wish I had more history of NBA behind me, but I mean, man, that's in terms of like their absolute skill, like if you just bottle and put into a vacuum their individual skills, I get what you're saying there. And I feel like I can't think of any great front court combinations off the top of my head right now, but
I mean,
I get what you're saying though. I mean, they're certainly as skilled as it's ever going to get.
Just for our listeners, if you want to have that conversation, with yourself, or make an argument on Twitter or make a case, you can go, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, you can go Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy. You could go David Robinson and Tim Duncan. I mean, these aren't really even cases when I start thinking of Ben Wallace and Rasheed Wallace.
Rasheed.
I mean, you're just making stretches. Like there's not two elite players. There's one really good all-time Hall of Fame player, and then Ewing and Oakley. I mean, you could go Barkley and Olajuwon, but Barkley wasn't, when he was a Rocket, he wasn't what he was when he was a Sun.
Yeah.
Rodman and David Robinson played together. Rodman wasn't what he was when he was a Bull. And then when you go to the present day, you just don't see anything. Blake Griffin and DeAndre is about as good as it gets. Mark Gasol and Zach Randolph is about as good as it gets. And they don't come close to Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. That's why I make that argument. To me personally, the only argument you could possibly make is David Robinson and Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan, if I'm not mistaken, only played 1 year with David Robinson. I think he was a rookie and then Robinson retired. I'm not sure how accurate that is. I'm pretty sure that was the case. But there's just not, there's not two players that can stretch the floor. And I understand that wasn't an element in the NBA game back then. And I know that this completely went to a whole different realm, but that's just my personal opinion. And I think if you look from a perspective, if you put Davis and Cousins on the court against whatever two other big men that played on the team together and they played 2-on-2, there's no question who would win.
Well, it's an interesting question. So it's two different things that you're talking about, because you're bringing up, for instance, when you bring up like Ewing and Oakley, the only reason that you're even bringing them up is because those teams were so good, and that team, those Knicks teams are like ingrained in our memories for being, the competition for the Bulls, and they were just generally really good. I mean, they were one of the best teams in the East. They went to the finals the 1 year. So, I mean, even if there are people with more talent, it always isn't all about the talent. It's more about your ability to win games. And I think to even bring it back to what we saw tonight, I mean, that's kind of the nice thing about having like somebody like Tony Allen and somebody like Jameer Nelson. Like, those are not the most talented players on the team even. We've got a $125 million point guard who turns out is actually a two guard, and we have to now use a guy that we got off the scrap heap to run the offense. And even when the guy who we signed in the offseason, Rajon Rondo, comes back, he's going to probably supplant Jameer Nelson. And so now we're going to have multiple playmakers ahead of Drew Holiday. But that it's interesting how you bring that up. I would say I think that Duncan and Robinson were definitely together more than 1 year, because Duncan was like in the 97 draft, and then they won the title in 99 together. And then I think Robinson was retiring maybe a year or two later. So they probably played together for like 3 or 4 or 5 years. But Robinson was at the end of his career when they were together. We can do this all night. I think Hakeem,
Robinson,
I kind of like
retired
the Hakeem
after the title season, right?
Did he? Well, he may have. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. They didn't play very long together. Tim Duncan wasn't in his even close to his prime yet, and that's why
he was pretty good. He was very good very early.
He wasn't Anthony Davis. I'm sorry. Over a career, he's more stable. He's the greatest power forward to me that's ever played the game. I'm just talking just skill set wise. We can if ands, but if you think about it from this perspective, is imagine that team and putting Anthony Davis on it and having a Greg Popovich. Not a knock to Alvin Gentry, but I think any team in the league would love to have Pop, and he does certain things, he's gonna make players like Anthony Davis a hell of a lot better. So I don't know,
I'd take Duncan's defense over almost anybody ever.
Okay, I can go with that. I guess I have more of an offensive perspective here.
Yeah. No, I get what you're going for.
I don't want to make it sound like I don't respect Tim Duncan, because if I'm being honest with you, Tim Duncan is probably my favorite player of all time. I don't know. I guess we'll see. It's kind of hard when you know when you don't see a player like Anthony Davis win games, and it comes down to you're trying to compile a player's ability and their legacy together, and that plays a factor. You know, I mean, Chris Webber, you look at players like that, he never could win. He couldn't get over the hump. And you know, how talented some of those players are, and you can't really have as much of a conversation or argument for them because they didn't win. And it's not necessarily fair when you're just talking basketball and you're talking skill set. And so I'm not trying to go as far to say Anthony Davis is just as good or better than Tim Duncan. I don't know. Let's just say I would take my chances with Boogie and AD against Tim Duncan and David Robinson. And that's just personal opinion.
Well, that's what we're going to be doing the rest of the year. Those two are going to, you know, if those guys play 70, 75 games together, we could be looking at a team that, you know, maybe we get all the way up to, say, a six seed or something. It's just going to be, those two are going to be so huge for what happens the rest of the way. We got to wrap this up. I'm going to open it up to another big picture question to kind of finish it off. What team, so I mean, we all kind of know who the best teams are in terms of, we know who's going to be in the finals again, but what team has played the best so far? Because I don't think that you would say that Golden State has played the best this season. So who would you say has played the best basketball this year?
Oh, man, that's tough.
So I'll let you think about it, because I feel like this year I can go on and on about them, but I'm going to say Boston. I think they've got everything put together. I think that Horford is on his way to another All-Star appearance, and he looks great.
Okay.
I think Kyrie looks great. I think
you
Jason
almost made
Tatum
me lose
is,
my mind until I remember that Al Horford is in the Eastern Conference. I almost lost it when you said that he was going to be an All-Star. Then I remember that we're talking about the Eastern Conference. So, okay, valid point.
Yeah.
Sorry,
but he's been
off.
Great. I mean, he's making like 50% of his threes. I mean, so he would maybe, well, you know, since we have two on our one team, it's kind of hard to tell what's going on in the West. But Jason Tatum looks like he's very, very real at a very, very young age, and only playing in 10 NBA games in his career. He looks like he was just a brilliant pick by them. I think Jaylen Brown is, you know, definitely a real NBA starter level guy. He's, it's going to be hard for those guys to even get time over the, which Morris brother do they have? I don't know. I like both of them. So they got one of the Morris brothers. Marcus Smart is having what I think is another great year. He's another one of those guys who's kind of like a winner somehow at a young age, and so I really like him. And then again, Kyrie, I mean, he's just like special. So
I really think
Boston so far this year.
Okay, I can agree that they're probably playing the best basketball right now in a sequence. They're 9-1 over the last 10 games. They're 9-game winning streak, but I don't think they're not a playoff team to me. They might win a series, but if they, and it's the Eastern Conference, let remind you for the 10,000th time, but if they find a tough team, when they find a tough team in the playoffs, should they match up with a Milwaukee or a Washington or Cleveland? I don't think, you know, with the level of time that you have to play those rookies there, if you play some veteran guards or just a veteran three, or, you know, just experienced players, they're going to get to those rookies. And Jaylen Brown's not a rookie second year player, but they're going to get to those guys in a 7-game series. And, you know, that's the only flag that is thrown for me against Boston is Horford. Horford's getting up there. He's not what he used to be. Kyrie's awesome, but he's not going to be able to put the entire team on his back without Gordon Hayward. and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are going to get figured out in seven games by a team that's good enough. So, you know, I don't know.
Terry Rozier, Aaron Baines. What about those guys?
Bums.
All-stars.
Bums. I was gonna go with Houston, was gonna be my pick. They're, you know, considering what they're dealing with Chris Paul out, they're 6-1 on the road right now. They don't have as great of a home record at 2-2. They've won 7 of their last 10. They're on a 3-game winning streak. They're sitting at the top of the Western Conference right now. So that's gonna be my answer, just because, you know, I'm not gonna go with the snakes of Boston. So I'm going to go there. I mean, there's some honorable mentions. I mean, who thought Detroit would start the season 7-3, Orlando 6-4. Memphis is 6-4 right now after losing Zeebo, letting Zeebo go, and Vince Carter, and you know, reviving Mario Chalmers and working with some young guys. So there's some honorable mentions. I don't think any team there's enough parity right now and enough struggle with some of the good teams to say, you know, who we can talk about who's the best team right now, but nobody looks great to me. You know, Boston is doing what they can do, but I think they're a one game team, and that works, and that's kind of what happened last year, you know, with the worst number one seed Eastern Conference team in probably in the history of the NBA. And that's just what that team has lived off of. And I think they'll get figured out in the 7-game series, but it's just early, man. There's not a lot of teams playing great basketball consistently. I think we'll get to that point once we get past about 20 games. That's going to be the learning curve of the season. Past 20 games, you're going to start to see exactly what teams are, what they're made of, what they can do. And then you can start talking about, you know, come closer to the All-Star break, you know, January, early February, where we see teams panning out as far as playoffs go.
Yeah. I'd also quickly mention Philadelphia has had some moments. They're obviously not going to be.
Ben Simmons has had some moments.
Dude, Ben Simmons is he's very real.
I hated the whole offseason. Once Lonzo got drafted, rookie of the year talk, everybody forgot about Ben Simmons. Like, he wasn't there.
People slept on Ben Simmons because he is so legit.
I said it here, rookie of the year. I would have said it season.
Did you predict that before the year?
If I didn't, I would have, so I'm going with it now.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah, no, he's great. He's running away with it. He looks really nice. It's time to go to bed, so let's end the podcast. We're the Big Picture Boys. We're going to be talking throughout the rest of the year. Go to thebirdrights.com, the SB Nation website for the Pelicans. Trevor, give us tell the viewer, or not the viewer, the listener, what they should do on their the way in which they get their podcast. Well, they got to rate it 5 stars, right?
Yeah, I care what you rate it. I want you to rate it 5 stars, but just
five stars.
I just want the gospel to be spread, Travis. If you don't like it, tell your friends. If you like it, tell your friends. You know, put it out there. I Preston mentioned it in the last episode. I'm doing a giveaway. I got 2 extra tickets to the Clippers game on Saturday.
Oh yeah.
If you go to my tweet, you'll see it pinned on my Twitter page. You just need to follow me, follow the Bird Rights, retweet the tweet, and go rate this podcast. You'll be entered to win. As long as I get 50 retweets and we have 100 ratings by Friday, I'll name a winner. I'll be at the Clippers game. I'll leave the tickets at the box office for you. I'll be working in the media. So if you want to, I'll have a preview up. I'll also be on the recap. I'll be there at the Smoothie King Center live tweeting on Saturday. So if you're interested in that, go over to my Twitter page and see what I'm talking about. But yeah, 5 stars. That's what we need. 5 stars.
That's fantastic. We're trying to give back. And so Trevor is ever so nicely willing to donate some tickets to, well, I wouldn't call it donating, I guess, if you're kind of making people give us 5 stars and retweet it, but you get the idea. We will.
Time out. I'm not making people give us 5 stars. I just say go rate us if you want to.
Going to make how about this? We're going to add another caveat to this. Trabe Ta says,
you better give us 5 stars. You can't get the tickets unless you give 5 stars.
Travis also does not speak on behalf anytime.
Come on.
Podcast on behalf of the Bird Rights or Trevor Ritchie. But if you wish to listen to what Travis is asking you to do, I will be forever grateful.
I'd totally give 5 stars. All right. So yeah, a couple nights from now, we play the Raptors. We've got, I don't know, about 70 more games this year. So stick with us. Go to birdrights.com. Find us on Twitter. And go Pels.
And now we begin part two of our podcast, where we are talking to Chris McKee of Raptors Headquarters. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
I appreciate you having me, Preston. Thank you much.
Of course. Follow Chris at Mr. McKee and follow his site at Raptors HQ. Chris, just for me, are you going to be live tweeting during this game?
No, I never do. I mean, come playoff time, I will, but regular season games, I it's too much.
Great. We always ask at the outset, just in case our guys want to like spy on the enemy and see what you have to say about the guy, give them a little bit of behind the scenes type information. But let's just dive on in on why you're here, Chris. The Raptors currently sit, I think, 5th in the Eastern Conference at 5-4. You guys had victories over the Bulls, 76ers, Lakers, Blazers, and Jazz, and losses to the Spurs, Nuggets, Warriors, and Wizards. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. I'll have everybody know the Raptors have not as of yet played the Bulls. Let's talk a bit more about some of your acquisitions. You guys re-signed Serge Ibaka and Kyle Lowry in the offseason, and you added CJ Miles, but you lost Corey Joseph, Patrick Patterson, PJ Tucker, and Damari Carroll. Forgive me if I missed anyone. How are Raptors fans feeling 9 games in terms of what your expectations were following this offseason?
You know, I think everything's going according to plan right now. Nobody expected, you know, any kind of drastic improvement or, you know, any drastic decline either way. I mean, the loss of Damari Carroll, people were celebrating here in Toronto over that. You know, he really didn't gel when he came from really minute one. It didn't seem a fit. You know, of those named mentioned, you know, they're missing Patterson a little bit, you know, some muscle off the bench, but PJ Tucker is, you know, his presence, I would say, of those four is the biggest loss. That, I mean, just his veteran leadership, the toughness, no one has really stepped up. I mean, it's really early in the season still, but no one stepped up to sort of fulfill that role just yet.
Cool. I want to play a quick game of who they are. And what this is I'm just going to tell you a statistic, and you tell me if it's a good indication of who the Raptors are, because we have all these numbers afforded to us on NBA.com/stats and team rankings. But like you said, it's such a small sample size. Don't know yet if it's an accurate representation of who the Raptors in fact are. And according to these numbers, offensively, the Raptors are 4th in scoring in the paint. However, they're 30th in three-point shooting, and they do a marvelous job of holding on to the ball. As it says, they're 4th in turnovers. They're also top 10 in free throw attempts. It appears the Raptors have the most success, according to these numbers, probably charging the basket and drawing contact on offense. Will the Raptors, do you think, first of all, is this true or not? And secondly, will the Raptors be able to continue this streak of success down low against bigger defenders like Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins?
You know, that stat, when you mentioned that, is surprising to me. You know, it's a young front court. I mean, aside from Serge Ibaka, guys like Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl, Lucas Nogueira, you know, these are young guys. And, you know, to hear that statistically they're doing well, you know, cleaning up off the boards. I know, you know, even center Jonas Valanciunas, he's a little behind his rebound stats from last year, but the emergence of Siakam and Poeltl getting a little bit more minutes, and, you know, according to these stats, I mean, it helping and doing well with it. It was a little surprising. Also, I mean, the poor three-point shooting, I mean, that's real surprising to me. During the preseason, it looked like that was going to be one of the strong points early in the season. CJ Miles got off to a really great start during the preseason. I know they went down to Hawaii for a couple of games against the Clippers, and were playing out in Portland, and CJ looked real good, but early on this season, he hasn't. And so, you know, you wonder if some of those points in the paint are as a result of, the forwards I just mentioned, you know, Siakam and Poeltl cleaning up the mess that guys like Miles and even Kyle Lowry, you know, Lowry's only averaging about 11 points a game right now, which is well behind his average. It's been all DeMar DeRozan right now. He's the only one shooting effectively from behind the arc. So some of those numbers are surprised. I don't think it's who they are. They'll get going. They'll rev it up. And there's no way they're going to end the season ranked 30th in 3-point. I think you'll see them closer to the, you know, definitely in the top half of the league in that statistical category.
You're listening to the Bird Rise, and we are talking to Chris McKee on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Let's go into defense. It says you guys, you're ninth in scoring, but you're also 10th in opponent scoring. So it seems that you guys are well-balanced right now. However, you're 20th in opponents' points in the paint. So you're giving up a lot of points in the paint, but you're only 4th in allowed three-pointers. You're also 28th in opponent fast break points. So you're giving up points in the paint and on fast breaks. You're 28th in fouls at 23 per game. Yet you guys are 4th in steals and 6th in blocks and 4th in causing turnovers. So basically an opportunistic defense who's going to give up points in the paint and in transition quite easily, but you don't allow any three-pointers, and you're going to create a lot of opportunities for yourselves with deflections and that sort of thing. Does that sound like you guys?
I think that's a fair representation of the Raptors. I mean, Dwayne Casey is a defense-first head coach. That's his model. That's what he's known for. And I know he spoke a lot about that in the preseason as, you know, getting everybody as his main goal early in the season is getting everybody working as a unit, working as one defensively foremost. So it's accurate. That should continue. I'd like to see them get a little tougher. You know, it's like I said, it's still way too early to pass full judgment, but it's, I think it's a fair representation of the Dwayne Casey model.
Excellent. A lot of our fans probably will be pretty familiar with your guys like DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, even Jonas Valanciunas and Serge Ibaka. But you mentioned Siakam earlier, and Norman Powell is a young guy for you who's putting up 24 minutes per game, and he's right around double digits in scoring. Talk about some of the development of your younger players like Norman Powell, like Siakam, and who you think the Pelicans might be surprised to see a great deal from here on Thursday.
Well, Norman Powell is a guy that just – the Raptors just re-signed him, I'm going to say 4 years, about $48 million right before the season. Give or take a million, that's pretty close. But, I mean, this is a guy that was a four-year player at UCLA. And that seems to be the motto, you know, that the Raptors have taken. I mean, you know, Anunoby was a bit of an exception this year. You know, he's just a one-year kid out of Indiana and missed the entire second half of the season with a knee injury. I'm surprised to actually see him playing this early in the season. I mean, I thought we weren't going to see him closer to around Christmas, but you know, these young guys heal pretty quickly and he's looked pretty good. He's freakishly athletic. His shooting is still very rough. I mean, this is a one-year college kid, you know, now trying to transition into being, you know, a full-time NBA guy, and he's getting some decent minutes early in the season. So Dwayne Casey did the same thing last year with Pascal Siakam. He started the first, I think, five games of the year, you know, as a rookie. He was the second of the team's first two round picks last year out of New Mexico State, former WAC player of the year. And this is a guy I believe didn't start playing basketball till later in high school. So he's one of these guys that he's nowhere near reached his potential. I love him. I've been a big fan of his, you know, following him from at New Mexico State into the NBA. I thought this guy could be a player, and I was real happy when the Raptors drafted him. But he's a guy who's – he's not going to be an all-star, but he's going to be a 10, 12-year pro, and he's improving exponentially, sorry about that, from year to year so far. And he looks good early on as well.
Before we get into some of your lineups and rotations, just something I'm noticing from Basketball Reference. It says, according to yesterday, Kyle Lowry was questionable. He was battling some kind of back injury, and CJ Miles as well with some kind of illness. That's not going to impede these guys from playing on Thursday, is it?
I can't see Lowry sitting out. You know, that surprised me. He should be good to go. CJ, I mean, he's looked fine. That might just be, you know, Dwayne Casey not wanting to publicly say that he's benching him because he's been shooting so poorly. And then guys like, you know, Norman Powell and Fred VanVleet, who's a second year guy out of Wichita State, an undrafted guy, that he's come in. He's played real well when he has had the opportunity to play. So There's been no report of CJ not playing anywhere in the Toronto media that I've been aware of, but I would expect Lowry to play for sure.
Now let's start talking about some of your lineups and rotations and matchups. Obviously you're going to have some version of Etuan Moore and Drew Holiday going head to head with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. But as far as big men go, which is the real concentration for the Pelicans right now, being that our two superstars are DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, you guys have Jonas Valanciunas and Serge Ibaka, which I would think would be the likeliest pair, at least initially, to go up with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. Talk a bit about how you expect them to perform defensively against those guys and what you can hope to get, what kind of attributions you can hope to get from guys off the bench like Siakam and like Jakob Poeltl.
Well, the way Boogie's playing, it's going to be tough for anybody to stop him. I mean, he's just been on fire early in the season. And you know, Anthony Davis, I mean, if he's not the best center in the league, you know, he's definitely the second best center, you know, up there. Him and Karl Anthony Towns obviously are sort of, you know, 1A and 1B. It's just far superior in talent to Jonas Valanciunas. I'm not a fan of Jonas. I think, you know, he's too lumbering. He only shows up. It seems like he only gets numbers when it doesn't really mean anything. I know the last couple of years in the playoffs, he's been invisible. And so early in the season, you know, hey, he may look good, but when it gets down to crunch time, I just can't see them, you know, getting anywhere near, you know, or being anywhere near able to defend Davis or Boogie. It's just a matchup that the Pelicans are going to be dominant in.
Okay, so we can expect to win that battle, which, you know, the Pelicans have two guys who are putting up historic numbers together right now. That's been happening every single game this season. Where we've been getting, you know, killed is with our reserves. Our other would-be contributors have not been playing as well this season. And you guys have a lot of bodies to throw at us. According to NBA.com/stats, you guys have 12 guys who are averaging 17 minutes per game or more. You guys really get into your depth, don't you?
Yeah, I'm surprised to see some of the minutes. You know, like I said, guys like Siakam's been getting, Poeltl, Lucas Nogueira. I mean, even Bruno Caboclo was getting a couple minutes a game, which I don't even know why he's even still on the roster, but he is. But it seems to be, you know, that's been the Raptors' motto early in the season. Let's give everyone a look. Let's find out what we are and see what the rotations are and what's going to fit for us moving forward. So it is surprising to see, but obviously, you know, as things wind down and, you know, we get into the second half of the season, you know, some of those, I would expect to see guys like Poeltl and Nogueira's minutes, you know, reduced drastically, and they stick to sort of the core of, you know, with Jonas and Ibaka and Lowry and DeRozan and, you know, whoever, whether it's CJ Miles or Norman Powell playing that three.
Okay, cool. I'll give you one more question and then we'll get to predictions and that sort of thing. According to the numbers here, Kyle Lowry has not been shooting particularly well. He's got about 37% from the floor. Is he going through a slump, and can we expect him to bounce out of it before Thursday?
I mean, he'll be fine. It is. I mean, something's not right with him. I mean, I don't know if you saw, he got ejected the other night. I believe it was on Sunday. And, you know, he was getting a little hot. And so I think it's frustrations boiling over. And that was the result of that ejection, that and a young referee being a little too quick, you know, to toss him. But he isn't playing well right now, but he's the guy that, you know, he's just been paid a big whack of money. And I think he's going to get right. He seems pretty focused in the offseason, and he's saying all the right things. But, you know, who knows? Maybe he wanted a little bit more help from the Raptors in the offseason. They didn't really go out and, I mean, other than CJ Miles, there was no real big free agent acquisitions. I mean, you know, they re-signed Ibaka. We got him last year. They re-signed Lowry. Besides that, they didn't bring anything new. So maybe it's a result of him being a little frustrated, but he'll be fine. He'll settle down and get back to being, you know, the Kyle Lowry we're used to. Excuse me.
Now, you guys are listening to The Bird Rights. We are talking to Chris McKee here on Nothing But Net Network on Dash Radio. Let's wrap this up, Chris. Give us a bit of a prediction. This game is going to be happening on Thursday in Toronto. How do you expect the game to go? And give us a couple of details specifically about when you expect your guys to go on a run, what rotations you expect will take advantage of the Pelicans, and what you expect the end result to be.
Well, to be honest, I'm leaning a little bit more towards New Orleans as the favorite in this game. You know, the Raptors haven't gelled yet. You know, you talk about what the rotations are. We don't have it. You know, it seems part of the philosophy is Dwayne Casey is going with the, you know, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. And so he's trying out a whole bunch of different rotations. So it's too hard to say, well, this is what it's going to be and this is what it's not going to be, because he's changing it up. And you mentioned earlier, all these guys, you know, 12 different guys getting a ton of minutes. He's trying out everyone. He's giving everybody a look. So who knows as far as that. But, you know, we talked about Boogie and Anthony Davis earlier on and how well they're playing early on. And so I can just see them dominating the young Raptors front court and going to school on them. And I would put my money on New Orleans coming away with a victory in Toronto on Thursday.
Wow, that would be a big win for us. We've been pretty sloppy and sluggish. Our record doesn't indicate just how difficult the early ongoing has been for us. Boogie and Anthony Davis, as everybody know, have just been putting up historic numbers like we mentioned, but Drew Holiday's been bad. Etuan Moore's been bad. Dante Cunningham, our three guys have been bad. It looked like our season was spiraling out of control before the Jameer Nelson acquisition. He came in and kind of steadied the bench unit for us. But it's good to hear that you guys are putting the ball in our court, so to speak. It would be a very big win for us, especially with tonight's game against the Pacers. If we can start our road trip with victories against both, that could really set things in an upward projection as Rajon Rondo is returning from an injury. Thank you so much again to you, Chris. And thank you so much. I'm Preston Ellis. Thank you to Trevor Ritchie and Travis Tate, who did the first half of this, our big picture boys. And of course you, Chris, we already mentioned he will not be live tweeting, but do you want to go ahead and plug your site?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can check me out on Twitter at Mr. McKee. And then as well, I too have recently started a podcast in my first episode last week. And it features, I talk a lot of college basketball. So I've got Kermit Davis, who's the head coach at Middle Tennessee, who's one of the best kept secrets in college basketball. And as well, a director by the name of Sean Menard. There's a new documentary coming out called The Carter Effect. And it's about Vince Carter and his effect, you know, his rise to stardom in Toronto in the late 90s and early 2000s, and how that's affected, you know, basketball in Canada, and how all these, there's these, you know, young Canadians playing in the NBA, guys like Tristan Thompson and Corey Joseph and Andrew Wiggins, that all point to Vince Carter as the reason why they're into basketball and why they love it. And so this documentary covers that, and I have a, you know, about a 10-12 minute chat with Sean Menard, the director of it. And then my next podcast will be coming out in the next day or two. And I've got interviews with Lane Kiffin and as well Kyle Keller, who's the head basketball coach at Stephen F. Austin, one of the perennial bracket busters come March Madness.
And Chris, what's the name of that pod?
It's just the Chris McKee podcast. You can check it out on YouTube. Just type Chris McKee, that's M-C-K-E-E podcast, and should pop up.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, dude. And thank you to all of you Pelicans fans. Again, you can find us on both Alexa and your Google Home devices. And if you have a moment, open up your podcast app, search the Bird Rice, click on the logo, scroll down, and give us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate it. Now we'll be back recapping this Raptors matchup on Friday with a special Clippers preview. Thank you again to Chris. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you, Travis. For now, let's go Pels. Thanks for listening to the Bird Rights on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Now, if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Bird Rights NBA Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at The Bird Rights for all the best coverage on the Pels. And if you really like the show and you want to show us even more love, give us a rating and review on iTunes by searching The Bird Rights. Your support has gotten us up to 45,000 downloads thus far, a spot on Nothing But Net Radio here on the Dash, and a feature on the front page of Blog Talk Radio. Now, we'll be with you guys all season, keeping you up to date on all the latest news on your favorite team. Let's go, Pels!